Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We recognize that cluster munitions create a risk of civilian harm from unexploded ordnance. This is why we've deferred the decision for as long as we could. But there is also a massive risk of civilian harm if Russian troops and tanks roll over Ukrainian positions and take more Ukrainian territory and subjugate more Ukrainian civilians.
The United States is facing outrage at home and worldwide over its decision to send cluster munitions to Ukraine. We'll speak with Human Rights Watch and with Norman Solomon, author of the new book, War Made Invisible, How America Hides the Human Toll of Its Military Machine. Then to Tennessee.
Late Friday night, a federal appeals court stayed an injunction that had paused Tennessee's anti-trans law that banned gender-affirming care. Now the law is in effect, and families across Tennessee are scrambling, and families across the country are wondering what this means for their medical care.
We'll speak with the ACLU's Chase Strangio about this major setback for trans rights, and with Tennessee Lookout editor Holly McCall in Nashville about how the state's attorney general demanded Vanderbilt University Medical Center hand over medical records for patients at its clinic for gender-affirming care. We'll also speak to Democratic State Senator Sarah McBride, the highest-ranking trans elected official in the U.S. She's now running to be the first openly transgender member of Congress.
Too many politicians want to divide us, to tell us that teachers, doctors, even our own neighbors are the enemy.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Biden declared the U.S.-UK relationship as rock solid as he meets with British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak in London today, ahead of the two-day NATO summit in Vilnius, Lithuania. Over the weekend, Sunak told reporters the U.K. opposes cluster munitions as a signatory to the International Convention banning their use. Biden's decision to send cluster bombs to Ukraine has sparked intense criticism, including from the UN, due to the danger they pose to civilians. We'll have more on cluster munitions after headlines. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky stepping up his campaign for NATO membership. On Friday, he visited Turkey as President Recep Tayyip Erdogan stated Ukraine deserves NATO membership. Zelensky said he hopes to expedite Ukraine's accession to NATO and get clear security guarantees during this week's summit. Meanwhile, President Biden told CNN Sunday Ukraine would not be ready to join the alliance until Russia's invasion, which marked its 500th day Saturday, is over.
I don't think there is unanimity in NATO about whether or not to bring Ukraine into the NATO family now, at this moment.
The UN is urging parties to prioritize global food security and ensure the Black Sea grain deal's extended, allowing the continued export of food and fertilizer from Ukrainian ports. Russia's threatened to quit the deal, which is due to expire in a week, July 17th. President Biden said Friday the U.S. has destroyed the last of its arsenal of banned chemical weapons, in a claim corroborated by the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. Under the Chemical Weapons Convention, which took effect in 1997, the U.S. was supposed to have destroyed its vast stockpile of chemical munitions, including the nerve agents VX and sarin, by 2012. U.S. law enforcement agencies continue to stockpile and deploy large quantities of tear gas, a chemical weapon that's banned in warfare. In Texas, the white nationalist gunman who killed 23 people at an El Paso Walmart in 2019 has been sentenced to 90 consecutive life terms after pleading guilty to federal hate crimes and weapons charges. The gunman still faces murder charges in a state trial that could bring him the death penalty. The mass shooting nearly 4 years ago was the deadliest attack on the Latinx community in modern U.S. history. Shortly before the massacre, the shooter published a racist online manifesto echoing President Trump's rhetoric at about an invasion of immigrants crossing the southern border. U.S. climate envoy John Kerry sounding the alarm after scientists reported the Earth logged its fourth hottest days in recorded human history last week.
If you listen to the scientists, which not enough people are, the last week they have described as terrifying and as uncharted territory. When you see the risks of what is happening already with global ice melt, with challenges of fires, of mudslides, the heat, people dying from the level of heat, the quality of air, people are dying around the world, in the millions, by the way, about 8 million people a year die from that.
In Pakistan, authorities report at least 50 people have been killed in floods and landslides since the start of the monsoon season, June 25th. In India, at least 18 people were killed over the weekend as torrential rains swept northern parts of the country. Here in the United States, a massive, slow-moving storm system brought torrential rains to northeastern states Sunday, where officials warned flooding could rival 2011's Hurricane Irene. One person died of drowning in New York's Hudson Valley, which received up to 8 inches of rain. In Tennessee, a panel of federal appeals court judges is allowing a new state law banning gender-affirming care for transgender youth to take effect immediately. The measure had been previously blocked by a lower court following a lawsuit filed by the ACLU on behalf of three families and a doctor. Saturday's ruling marks the first time a federal court has allowed a ban on gender-affirming care to be enforced in the United States. Similar legislation has been blocked by federal courts in Arkansas, Alabama, Florida, Indiana, and Kentucky. We'll have more on this story later in the broadcast. We'll go to Nashville. In Sudan, nearly two dozen people were killed Saturday in military airstrikes in a residential area of Omdurman, Sudan's most populous city. It was one of the deadliest attacks in an urban area since fighting erupted in April between the Sudanese army and the rapid support forces. At least 17 other people, including five children, were killed in an army air raid in Khartoum last month. The UN's warned Sudan is on the brink of a full-scale civil war, as Egypt is hosting talks in Cairo this week on how to end the violence. The Pentagon says U.S. forces killed at least 10 al-Shabaab fighters in overnight airstrikes in a remote area of Somalia Saturday. Separately, the Pentagon said Sunday a U.S. drone strike killed Islamic State leader Osama al-Mahajir in eastern Syria. U.S. Central Command said in a statement no civilians were killed in the drone strike, but said it was assessing reports of a civilian injury. The claims could not be independently verified. CENTCOM said the U.S. strike was carried out by the same MQ-9 drones that were harassed by Russian military aircraft in separate incidents last week in Syrian airspace. In Mexico, another journalist has been found dead. Luis Martin Sanchez Iniguez, a staff writer for the newspaper La Jornada, had been missing since Wednesday. His body was found Saturday near the city of Tepic in the state of Nayarit. Local officials said his body showed signs of violence with two handwritten signs affixed to his corpse, though they didn't reveal what the messages said. The Netherlands government collapsed on Friday after failing to reach an agreement on stricter rules for asylum seekers. Dutch Prime Minister Mark Rutte said he's quitting politics but will serve as a caretaker leader until general elections are held in November. His ruling coalition came apart after two parties objected to plans by Rutte to restrict the rights of migrants whose asylum claims have already been approved, barring them from reuniting with their children. Rutte has denied those reports. Rights groups have blasted his government for closing government-run asylum centers and for dangerous and unsanitary conditions at existing centers that violate European Union standards. An Afghan U.S. military interpreter who fled Afghanistan after the Taliban takeover 2021 was shot dead last week while working as a Lyft driver in Washington, D.C. 31-year-old Nasrat Ahmadyar had resettled in Virginia with his wife and four children, the youngest just 15 months old. A crowdfunding campaign has been set up to help them. A report last year by the group Gig Workers Rising found at least 50 drivers for Uber, Lyft and DoorDash were killed between 2017 and early 2022. Here in New York, protesters rallied in front of the UN headquarters Friday, demanding the release of 62-year-old Palestinian prisoner, writer and organizer Waleed Dhaka, who has been in Israeli custody since 1986. Dhaka completed his term for the 1984 killing of an Israeli soldier, Moshe Tamam, this year. But he was sentenced to two additional years in 2017 for smuggling phone devices into Ketziot prison. This is organizer Munir Atallah speaking at Friday's actions outside the UN.
Waleed has developed a rare form of bone marrow cancer, and he has essentially been dealt a death sentence by the Israeli courts by the Israeli prison systems because he's being denied medical care for this life-threatening cancer. And his family has also been denied visitation to see him. He's in a state of crisis, and we call on them to release him immediately. And we're pushing the UN to push the Israeli regime to do so.
President Biden announced new measures Friday to lower health care costs by cracking down on so-called junk insurance plans, which were expanded under the Trump administration, which typically don't cover so-called pre-existing conditions. The proposed rules take aim at short-term plans by limiting their duration to just a few months and mandating they clearly disclose the limits of the coverage provided. And a judge in Oklahoma has dismissed a reparations lawsuit from the last three living survivors of the 1921 Tulsa race massacre, in which a white mob burned down what was known as Black Wall Street, the thriving African-American neighborhood of Greenwood. An estimated 300 Black Americans were killed. The three plaintiffs, Lessie Benningfield Randall, Viola Fletcher, and Hughes Van Ellis, all over 100 years old now, could still appeal the ruling. Next month, 109-year-old Viola Fletcher is releasing her memoir, Don't Let Them Bury My Story. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The United States is facing questions at home and worldwide over its decision to send cluster munitions to Ukraine. The weapons release smaller so-called bomblets over a wide area and often leave unexploded munitions that threaten the lives of civilians for years to come. They are banned under the Convention on Cluster Munitions, an international treaty signed by 123 countries, though not signed by the United States, Ukraine, or Russia. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan defended the Biden administration's move Friday.
We recognize that cluster munitions create a risk of civilian harm from unexploded ordnance. This is why we've deferred the decision for as long as we could. But there is also a massive risk of civilian harm if Russian troops and tanks roll over Ukrainian positions and take more Ukrainian territory and subjugate more Ukrainian civilians. Ukraine would not be using these munitions in some foreign land. This is their country they're defending. These are their citizens they're protecting. And they are motivated to use any weapon system they have in a way that minimizes risks to those citizens.
The Pentagon claims the cluster bombs that's sending to Ukraine have a failure rate of just over 2%. But the Pentagon's own statement suggests the cluster munitions include older grenades with a known dud rate of 14% or more. Dissent within the Democratic Party to Biden's decision is being led by California Congressmember Barbara Lee, who's running to replace the retiring Senator Dianne Feinstein and was the sole vote against the invasion of Afghanistan in 2001. Congressmember Lee spoke on CNN Sunday.
We know what takes place in terms of cluster bombs being very dangerous to civilians. They don't always immediately explode. Children can step on them. That's a line we should not cross. I think the president's been doing a good job managing this war, this Putin aggressive war against Ukraine. But I think that this should not happen. He had to ask for a waiver under the Foreign Assistance Act just to do it, because we have been preventing the use of cluster bombs since, 2010.
Today, President Biden's in Britain ahead of the NATO summit this week in Lithuania. He met with UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, who noted the UK is a signatory to the Convention on Cluster Munitions.
Well, the UK is signatory to a convention which prohibits the production or use of cluster munitions and discourages their use. We will continue to do our part to support Ukraine against Russia's illegal and unprovoked invasion. We've done that by providing heavy battle tanks and most recently long-range weapons. You know, and hopefully all countries can continue to support Ukraine. Russia's act of barbarism is causing untold suffering to millions of people.
Several Southeast Asian nations still cluttered with cluster bombs the United States dropped on them during the Vietnam War have also raised alarm. A Laotian Ministry of Foreign Affairs, said Monday it opposed Biden's move, quote, as the world's largest victim of cluster munitions. And the Cambodian Prime Minister Hun Sen said Sunday, quote, it would be the greatest danger for Ukrainians for many years or up to 100 years if cluster bombs are used in Russian-occupied areas in the territory of Ukraine. This comes as a new report by Human Rights Watch on cluster bombs used by Russia and Ukraine documents they repeatedly killed and injured civilians. For more, we're joined by two guests. Mary Wareham is Advocacy Director of the Arms Division of Human Rights Watch and editor of the annual Cluster Munition Monitor. Also with us is Norman Solomon, Executive Director of the Institute for Public Accuracy and co-founder of RootsAction.org. His piece in The Hill is headlined, "The U.S. Should Not Provide Cluster Munitions to Ukraine." His new book, War Made Invisible, How America Hides the Human Toll of Its Military Machine. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Mary Wareham, we're going to begin with you in Wellington, New Zealand. If you can respond to the U.S. decision, what does this mean for the world that the U.S., the most powerful country on Earth, says it will supply cluster bombs to Ukraine?
Thanks, Amy. This is an appalling decision by the Biden administration to transfer potentially hundreds of thousands of artillery rounds containing potentially millions of unreliable submunitions that have got a higher dud rate than we believe the Pentagon has disclosed. You mentioned 14% may fail to explode. You know, Human Rights Watch objected to this transfer due to the likelihood of civilian harm. And we do not say that lightly, but after issuing 10 reports detailing the extensive use of cluster munition rockets and missiles by Russian forces since the very first day of the conflict, Ukrainian forces have also used cluster munitions in fewer numbers. But what our report released last week shows is that they had used cluster munition rockets, firing them into a city in the east called Izium over a period of nearly 6 months during 2022 when it was under Russian occupation. And the stories are pretty sad and horrific. People who were killed in their homes during the cluster munition strike, a woman cooking outside in her garden who was killed while together with her young daughter and her mother, other neighbors sitting on a park bench outside of their apartment building who were hit in a strike. These are all casualties from the time of use, which is one reason why cluster munitions are prohibited. And of course, the other is that the cluster munitions results in unexploded ordnance. Many submunitions fail to detonate as intended. And that leaves a legacy of contamination, which I think the Lao Foreign Ministry statements and the Cambodian Prime Minister have referred to quite eloquently. They do not want to see the horror of cluster munitions, you know, get any worse in Ukraine because they know full well that it will take years to clear up the remnants.
And talk specifically, Mary, about why children are so often the victims of these unexploded, I hate to say bomblets because it almost sounds sort of cute, which of course it isn't.
Some call them submunitions, and the U.S. military calls the DPICM submunitions grenades, but they are. They're a small battery size, and some have got features that are appealing to children, such as ribbons that are used to stabilize the munition as it disperses in the air. Others have got fins, interesting shapes, colors, small size, and cluster munitions, submunitions from them tend to land on the ground or bury into the ground, and that's where children come across them. Children are by their very nature curious, and there's going to have to be some extremely thorough risk education for Ukrainian children for the years to come to keep them safe from these remnants. In other countries, children are also injured while they're collecting scrap metal to sell on. This is particularly common in Southeast Asia, and it's yet another reason why children account for the vast majority, they account for more than half of the casualties from the remnants, and the vast majority of victims of cluster munitions are civilian, not military.
And then talk about this meeting that President Biden just had with Rishi Sunak, the British Prime Minister, before they head to Vilnius, Lithuania, for the NATO summit. You don't know what they said in that meeting, but Rishi Sunak, the Conservative Prime Minister, did come out with a statement this weekend because he had to, because Britain, unlike the U.S., Ukraine and Russia, is a signatory to the cluster bomb ban, the international cluster bomb ban that are signed by 123 nations. Which says you can't produce them, you can't promote them, and that's significant. You have to discourage the use of them. And yet here, a day or two after President Biden makes his announcement, they meet.
Yes, the United Kingdom served as the president of the Convention on Cluster Munitions last year. It did a huge amount of work to promote the convention with countries that have not yet joined. And in February, Nigeria ratified the convention. We understand that other African states that have not yet done so are in the process of preparing to join the international convention. So that's the kind of work that the UK has been doing in support of the convention. So I can imagine that the Prime Minister would want to remind President Biden of that. And we see, you know, more than 10 countries' statements. I've seen there's more, but we've seen other world leaders reaffirming their country's status as a member of the Convention on Cluster Munitions, because that's important because the treaty doesn't just prohibit use, production, stockpiling and trade. It has the very strong provision prohibiting any assistance with those banned activities. So countries that are U.S. allies that have signed the treaty, that are trying to support Ukraine, had better be very careful when it comes to assisting in any way with the transit of the U.S. cluster munitions headed for Ukraine and with their facilitating their use once they get into the country. That is strictly off limits to countries that are part of the Convention on Cluster Munitions, and that's why they have to tell Biden this.
And can you talk about the report you just put out saying it's not just Russia that's been using cluster bombs in Ukraine, it's Ukraine. And where do those cluster bombs come from that Ukraine is currently using?
So Ukraine inherited a stockpile of old Soviet cluster munitions during the breakup of the Soviet Union, and it used those cluster munition rockets in 2014 and 15 in the east, and we believe in the current conflict as well. But now apparently it has run out of those types of cluster munitions, and it needs more ammunition for its artillery systems, its artillery projectiles. Cluster munitions, you know, can be dropped from the air, as you've seen in previous conflicts, but in Ukraine the vast majority appear to be launched from the ground in rockets and missiles and artillery and mortar projectiles. Ukraine's use has been far less extensive compared to what Russia has done, but Ukraine has used cluster munitions in Ukraine since the very beginning of the conflict. Last March was the first use recorded. And the United Nations also went into the same area that Human Rights Watch did last year and saw the remnants of cluster munitions there and reached the same conclusion that Ukrainian forces were likely responsible for that cluster munition use. So we were disappointed to see Ukraine deny that it used cluster munitions in Izium in 2022. It has admitted that anti-personnel landmines may have been used and is studying a report from Human Rights Watch detailing that use of another prohibited weapon. But, you know, these weapons are prohibited for very good reason, and that's due to the harm caused to civilians. And this is why we do not wish to see any more cluster munitions used by any side to the conflict in Ukraine due to the civilian casualties now and into the future.
I wanted to go to National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan defending the Biden administration's decision to send cluster bombs to Ukraine.
Russia's been using cluster munitions with high dud or failure rates of between 30 and 40%. In this environment, Ukraine has been requesting cluster munitions in order to defend its own sovereign territory. The cluster munitions that we would provide have dud rates far below what Russia is doing, is providing, not higher than 2.5%.
So if you could respond to what he's talking about, you know, the dud rate being, well, what creates those bomblets, if you will, those essentially what become landmines. He's saying that Russia, and I heard Biden say something like Russia's dud rate was like 30%, and to show that we're humane, ours is only 1%. But the Times pointed out the U.S. dud rate is as high as 14%. Can you talk about the significance of all of this?
I mean, we were seriously hoping for some actual details in the announcement on Friday from the Department of Defense as to how it reached the 2.35, you know, no higher than that dud rate that they're claiming, because they're not releasing any of the testing or any of the background information, any of the data on this. And the 14% dud rate number comes from the Pentagon's own historic documents that they have published in the past. So we're unsure why in this case the Pentagon cannot be much more transparent about how it reached its numbers. But dud rates are only part of the equation here. There's a lot more that has to be taken into consideration. And also in operations and warfare, dud rates are often much higher. The types of cluster munitions that the U.S. is sending also do not work well in muddy areas where it has been wet, where the ground is moist, you know, and this is what we've seen in Ukraine with the flooding in recent weeks. So there's all sorts of challenges with the transfer, but kind of pointing to the technical fix of, you know, somehow we're going to, you know, deal with this through dud rates is not an adequate response or answer at all.
Mary Wareham of Human Rights Watch, I also want to bring in Norm Solomon of the Institute for Public Accuracy and RootsAction.org. Your new book, Norm, War Made Invisible, How America Hides the Human Toll of Its Military Machine. Can you talk about how this is playing in the United States and talk about it being a Democratic president, President Biden, who has, though admitting there is pushback, he's made this decision to send cluster bombs to Ukraine?
Well, this is playing with a message from the White House, do as we say, not as we do, to Russia and really to the world. Last year, the White House said that use of cluster munitions deserves to be in the category of war crime. Now they're saying, just fine, no problem. And this is symptomatic of a mentality, what Dr. King called the madness of militarism, that blends with a kind of doublethink, as George Orwell called it. This is a way of saying that we want to run the world, we make the rules, we break the rules. It's also a way of saying that when civilians are killed and it's done by an enemy state, that's terrible. We condemn it because we have the high moral ground. But when we are accessories to the crime, when we do it, as the U.S. did in the invasion of Iraq, using 1.8 to 2 million so-called bomblets in the first few weeks of that invasion, when we do it, it's A-okay. And this is one reason why I called the book War Made Invisible, because there are so many layers in which the United States engages in warfare directly and indirectly, and it gets sanitized, it gets made invisible, it gets spun, as the White House in the last 72 hours is in overdrive. This is a willingness to engage with the world and say, we get to define what lives matter and what lives don't. And I think this is the tacit messaging coming from the Biden administration, especially in the last few days in this context, that we are supporting the human rights of civilians in Ukraine and elsewhere, except when they don't matter, because then we have a tactical strategic reason otherwise. Part of the messaging is, oh, if the Ukrainian government kills Ukrainian civilians, that's okay, because that's for their own good. And Amy, I think one thing that needs to be really pointed out and thought about deeply that I have not seen in the corporate media whatsoever is that the same logic that the Biden White House is using to try to justify this horrific decision can be applied and is applied in the strategic doctrine of both Russia and the United States. We've been hearing for weeks from the rumblings on Capitol Hill and from the administration that Ukraine is running out of weapons. And we have all of these cluster munitions stockpiled in the United States, and they're not doing any good. Why put them to waste? We should send them to Ukraine, which is the logic that ultimately prevailed. And the reason given is that Ukraine might lose the war. And so if the so-called conventional warfare is not going well, and it looks like the back is up against the wall, we need to use this weapon that before we had said was absolutely abhorrent. Well, where does that logic lead? It leads to use of tactical nuclear weapons, because the doctrine of the U.S. and Russia is that they reserve the right to use nuclear weapons, to be the first to use nuclear weapons if their conventional war is not going well.
You've written an interesting piece in the Hill, Norm. RFK Jr.'s campaign is getting a boost from Biden's hawkishness. We also just played a clip of Congressmember Barbara Lee, who's running for Dianne Feinstein's seat in the Senate, who is one of, what, something like 19...